Okay, we're going to take your calls, but continue talking with Dr. Matthew McKay about Seeking Jordan. I've got to find out what it's like on the other side without going there. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Matthew McKay. We'll get to your calls too. Matthew, back to this. What is this? Is it heaven-like or not?
It's not like any vision we have of heaven. It's not the harps. It's not
the clouds.
Now, it's true, though, that souls can create images. They can, out of energy, they can make things look a certain way. They can make something look like a temple. They can make it look like a classroom. They can make something look like a waterfall. But this is all made out of energy. It's not made out of atoms. It's not made out of matter. So heaven really can be constructed out of energy to look any way souls agree that they want it to look. But in fact, it is just energy. And it is a place where there are literally, Jordan tells me, billions of souls. And they, of course, don't just reincarnate on Earth. There are many, many planets that they reincarnate to. And most of those planets, by the way, I'm told by Jordan, are a lot easier than this one. Earth is kind of an acquired taste. It's a tough place.
Huh.
And
I knew it.
So souls who reincarnate here face some really a difficult life.
When you were going through this with him, and I assume it's still ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, we're still talking.
Still communicating. Still. Did you discuss the Almighty One, God, the divine intelligence? Did that come up?
Absolutely. I asked him directly, you know, is there God? And his answer was this. There's collective consciousness, the all, the divine. It's all of the souls, all of consciousness is actually both individual, or your individual souls, like each of us talking now, all the listeners, but we all also combine into collective consciousness. Collective consciousness, he tells me, is God, that we, in fact, all are part of God, that God is the entire sum total of consciousness in the universe. And that our job as individual souls, interestingly, is to incarnate and to come to planets to learn lessons that can only be learned in a physical environment. And we, all of the things that we learn, all the wisdom we acquire, all the mistakes we make, all the failures that we have, all of those things we're learning from them. And all of that knowledge is uploaded to collective consciousness. So collective consciousness relies on us to learn and grow. And so the conventional wisdom about God is that God is static, God is perfect, God just exists somewhere on a throne, and has graciously made souls and human beings to worship him and live in his glory. Jordan says that that's not true, that God, the collective consciousness, all of us, is evolving. We are evolving and growing, and we'll do that forever. And so everything we learn is helping God evolve, grow, and develop. And what God does with that, what we all collectively do with that, is that we create new universes. So each, as we learn and grow, we create new universes and interact with those new, more perfect universes and learn from that. So the process, again, of you know, is there a personal God, a God that we can pray to? Well, we can pray to collective consciousness. We can pray to the guides who are helping us from the other side and get answers. But God himself, the divine, is all of us, growing, learning, evolving.
Did you get into how did this all start? Because I have a very difficult time comprehending the Big Bang Theory, for example. I can't figure out or understand how something would start from basically nothing, a minute little dot of something, of matter, explode or something and turn into everything we see in our universe, I just don't get it. Did that come up at all? How did it start?
Well, Jordan tells me that the universe, all of matter that we see, is basically thought. The collective consciousness, the divine, all of us, we dream up the universe. We dream up what it's going to be, what the laws, the natural laws are going to be. We design it essentially with a holographic process where we create the design and then we put it into effect. And really, the Big Bang is just the first thought of what the universe was going to be, and it exploded from that thought. And this is just one universe. This is by no means the first one. It's not the last one. It's just the one that we happen to be interacting with right now. There have been universes before this. There will be ones that follow. Each of them more developed, more extraordinary, with new elements that the divine, that consciousness connects to and interacts with. So he's telling me that the Big Bang is nothing more than the origin of the first thought.
Did he discuss whether this is more spiritual or scientific? The ability to communicate with you, what the other side might be, what life after death is. There's got to be a science behind it, but how does he weigh that?
Well, there is science to telepathy. Telepathy is the exchange of energy that in a way that can be read, that can be understood. I mean, in the same way that Morse code is a sequence of dots and dashes and sounds. Telepathy really is an energy in a form that can be interpreted and read by another consciousness. So is there a science to that? Yes. There's a science that explains and makes sense of telepathy, and we aren't there yet. We don't know how it works. But it does work, and we have evidence for telepathy. We have evidence for telepathy between living organisms, between embodied souls who are already on the earth. And we certainly have a lot of evidence for telepathy with souls on the other side. We know that from the work of mediums, shamans. We know it from hypnotic regressions. We have lots of evidence that we can communicate with the other side. We just don't know exactly what the laws are that define how that energy works.
All right, let's go to the phones now. We'll pick it up by going to David in Salem, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Hi, David. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
As usual, fascinating discussion. You kind of felt like Groucho Marx when you said Big Bang Theory, because it sort of seemed that way to me.
Say the magic word.
It seemed that way to me, where people say, well, how did this happen then? And then they just... science sort of cobble on something like we all meet in our little soul groups and agree on these things. And I'm thinking, well, how do we do that if we're all different ages? Well, we all meet in, like, I don't know if we're dreaming or if, in any case, it seems like things just keep getting made up and we can't verify it even for ourselves. And so when we're like, what happens afterwards is we seem to go into these huddles and we make a play. And then we go up to the line to execute it, but we pass through amnesia bill and allow these things to passively happen to us anyways. And then what about on a larger scale, like the Holocaust? Is there like a big sign-up? You know, like, hey, everybody, you know, we're doing the Holocaust thing, and, you know, grab your mask, and no, Hitler's already been taken, you know, and the Rwanda genocide, you know, like, do people agree upon that stuff, too? And you know, it just gets confusing after a while when you think of all the possibilities.
Well, let's talk about some of those possibilities, Matthew. What dictates these events and these things that happen?
Well, just before we incarnate, we actually participate in the process with our guides of choosing our next life and the the body that we're going to live in, the family we're going to be born into, the culture we're going to be entering, and the time and place in history. And so as we look at and try to evaluate, is this a life that we want to attempt, we also look at the probabilities for that life. We can see down that timeline the various events that are likely to happen. And certainly the laws of cause and effect, all rippling together, do create things that we can anticipate. You know, we could anticipate from the afterlife the Holocaust before it happened. We can see the lines of cause and effect moving in the direction of this massive explosion of pain. Now, it's also true, though, that when we enter a life, while there are all these probabilities of what's going to happen, including how long we're going to live and what kinds of physical suffering we're going to have and what's going to happen to our families and so forth, all these probabilities are in place. But as we live and we make choices all along, that affects those probabilities. So some of the major probabilities, like if you're born into France in 1939, well, you're probably going to experience the invasion from Germany and the Second World War and the Vichy government. So that's very highly probable. But you could be making all kinds of choices throughout your life so that later on, the things that were probable actually don't happen. And so the way it works is we can predict a lot about the future from the afterlife. We can make best guesses about what will occur each in an individual life, and on a cultural and world level, we can make good guesses. But as time goes by, each individual soul is making choices, and those choices have an aggregate and total effect that may make things turn out very differently.
Matthew, does your son, Jordan, talk about the future? Does he literally give you predictions of the future?
I've never asked him about the future. And part of that is respect. I don't try to get him to help me, warn me about things, or to try to figure out what's going to happen next. I don't think he would tell me anyway. I'm here having to live my life in this incarnation, making decisions in the present moment based on what I know now. I don't think he's going to let me have knowledge of the future that would help me cheat, so to speak, and be able to make decisions not based on the best wisdom I have now, but on information that comes to me from the other side. So that's not something we do. We don't look at the future, but we do look at, and he does advise me about what would be best to do right now. Now, maybe he's got an eye on the future, and he's giving me advice based on what would likely happen, but he doesn't tell me what it is.
Let's go next to San Diego. Anna Sophia is with us. Hello, Anna. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George. George, I have 2 points, and then I ask. You know, that when we die, we leave with the same consciousness that we have. We don't get any wiser to begin with. And second point is, if I almost fell off my chair when I heard this. If Jesus thought that pain and suffering was so great, he wouldn't have stopped it. Everywhere in the Bible that Jesus went, he stopped the pain and the suffering, and he raised the people from the dead, because it is a habitual mental slope that we are in. Jesus himself raised from the dead.
Yes,
why is this guy saying that pain and so, it's in your mind. You know, he said also in the Bible, heaven is here right now. So heaven, so on earth. He wasn't talking about suffering and pain. He cured that. He healed that because he didn't think that was our inheritance. I just can't stand hearing
it. But Anna, what are you saying? There is no pain and suffering?
Well, it's in your mind. Yes, because that is the mass consciousness is so ingrained in the pain and suffering because they have been hearing from religion, the dark doom and gloom and fire and brimstone religion that we hear. We are here to suffer and all that baloney. We choose that. Because there is where the mass consciousness is in.
Well, you know what? I bet if you told a couple hundred thousand people who are in Fallujah in Iraq about pain and suffering, they would tell you there was pain and suffering there. But let's get your reaction, Matthew, to some of the things she said.
Well, it's inherent in our lives that we have suffering. And we can't even get out of this world without facing death. Without dealing with disease, we have losses. The people that we love most oftentimes are the people who leave this earth before we do, and we have to live here without them. Suffering is a basic part of human life. Now, we're not here specifically to suffer. We're here to learn, and suffering is one of the mediums through which we learn best. We learn how to love when there's pain, And I have to say that the thought that we don't develop or grow or develop wisdom seems odd to me. I think most of us in our lives experience that we become more wise as we go along. We learn things. We make better decisions. We learn how to express love more completely, and we learn to do less harm to others. So we are learning and growing in wisdom, and we do that in the life we know. And in terms of reincarnation, we are growing in wisdom through all of these hundreds of lives that we lead. So we are growing in wisdom. We are developing, and we know that from our own experience. And while we grow in wisdom, it also means that collective consciousness, God, divine, whatever we want to call it, is also growing and developing. And so I have to say that it's so palpably clear that we do suffer, and the pain is very real, and that through that pain often is the greatest source of our growth.
When we do die, there is a learning process too, isn't there? I mean, don't you get better and better the more you reincarnate?
That's right. Each life we show up with more inherent wisdom. And in early lives, we are just struggling, usually, Jordan tells me, just figuring out what to do with this body. We have this nervous system, and our body is full of impulses and desires, and we're like riding a wild bronco. Our bodies are just pulling us in lots of different directions, and we have a hard time in the first incarnations, really even beginning to master how to handle our desires and our impulses and our emotions. And that takes time. And over in many incarnations, we get better at it. We do carry some wisdom from life to life. And at a certain point, we actually are able to do things in this world with the wisdom we've acquired over many lifetimes.
All right, we're going to be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final questions. Don't go away. And welcome back to Coast, Matthew McKay with us as we talk about Seeking Jordan, the story of his son that he has communicated with. I guess it's fair to say you both wrote this book, right, through the channel writing.
That's absolutely right. Jordan dictated more than half of the book.
Who initiates the initial contact now? Do you have to go to him, or does he come to you?
I go to him. I put myself in a position where I get ready to receive information from him, meditate, I focus my attention, and then I write my question. And what I've realized in the course of these years that I've been talking to Jordan is that the souls on the other side are just a thought away. All I have to do is bring my attention to him, bring a question to him, and he'll come right back with his answer. And I think that's really important to know, and that the circle of life is completely unbroken. Death does not change these relationships. The folks on the other side, the souls on the other side, are ready to talk to us, are ready to guide us, are ready to give us knowledge, insight, and wisdom that we couldn't possibly have living on this planet. So my communications with him have given me that reassurance that I am not alone and that there is no loss. That's probably the most important lesson I've gotten from this. That
even though I'm sure you miss him.
I miss that my boy. I miss hugging him. I miss the physical experience of seeing and having him in my life. I miss watching him grow and develop. All of that desperately miss. But what I don't have is loss. I don't feel like I've lost Jordan. Jordan is with me. He's literally with me anytime I want to ask him a question or to connect with him. He is there, and I feel like I can have his support. And in a paradoxical way, I have more contact with Jordan than I had with him in life.
Yeah, I can see that. Sometimes parents do that.
Yeah,
they do that.
And I've learned that, that on the other side, souls are absolutely ready to hear from us anytime. Trying to get a hold of Jordan in life was a task. Huh. Sometimes I had to really work at it. But through telepathy and through after-death communication, he is present whenever I need him.
I think
this is true for everybody.
If he stopped communicating, would you feel as if you're still fulfilled?
Well, let's see. That's a good question. If he stopped communicating and I didn't know why.
Just stop. Cold turkey.
I would be pretty disturbed by that. I think it would really scare me, and it would make me wonder what had happened and, you know, what went wrong. Now, in all these years, he's never stopped, and he's assured me. In fact, I mean, he's very clear with me. He said that we will never stop communicating, and he's literally told me that the conversations that we've had in life and the conversations we continue to have, the book that we wrote, is just a small part of a relationship that spanned many lifetimes, spanned millennia, and that the conversations that we have now will go on forever, and all the things that we learn will go on forever, and that we will continue to incarnate together, share lives, having various relationships. And past lives, we've had very different kinds of relationships. In one past life, he was my wife. In another past life, I was female, and he was an unrequited love. In another life, we were in a yeshiva, and he was a wise old rabbi, and I was the young firebrand mentee. I mean, we've had lots of different lives together, and in each of those lives, we've learned very specific things. And karma dictates that, you know, which karma is nothing more than our lesson plan, the thing that we've come to this particular life to learn. And part of the karma of our lives has been for me to learn about loss, because he often leaves early from the lives we've shared in the past.
Yeah.
So it is...
too early sometimes.
And he's left too early in this life, painfully early. But he also said that we decided before we came here that we were going to do this together, that we were going to try to bring this communication to folks so that they would know that it was possible to communicate past death and that there is no loss, that this was going to be something that we planned to do.
All right, let's take the final calls here. We'll go to Dan in Salt Lake City, Utah, to get things going. Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thank you.
I just want to say that I believe in death and spirits and what your guest, Matthew McKay, has been talking about, and would just like to wish him well in his endeavors.
All right, very good. Noted. There you go, Matthew.
I'd like appreciate that.
Charles in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Charles, go ahead, sir.
Yes, how you doing?
Good.
Yes. One thing, okay, my mother died March 21st of this year. And, you know, I'm still trying to go along and stuff like that. The thing, well, I can tell you, but we don't have time, of course, the challenges handling something like this when you're blind, you know, especially when somebody has dementia. You know, my mother died from dementia. Actually, she died as the mother I knew maybe about 2010, 2011. We had to bring a nurse in to take care of her during the day. She was totally different from the mother I knew. And, you know, I'd, during the nights and on the weekends, I got help on the weekends too, but at nights, like, I would take care of her, et cetera. So anyway, you know, I could go on and on. But one thing I know about death, you can't deny it. You can't stop it. You can't prevent it. You can't fight it. You have to accept it. I mean, I would love to see her again, and I think I know I'll see her again in the next life in heaven. But, you know, in the meantime, how can I find out what she's thinking or what she's doing now? And any questions you want to ask me, go ahead.
Well, the first thing I would say is that your mom no longer has dementia. That was
right. I agree.
A problem that was a physical problem, and that is gone.
You know it.
If you were to communicate with her now, she would be able to she would be the mother that you knew. And not only the mother that you knew, but she would also have the wisdom that's available to us in the afterlife. So she's a soul now that has great knowledge. And so I would encourage you to connect to her. You can do it through prayer. You can do it through channeled writing, such as I'm suggesting. It's very easy to do. And all you have to do is literally ask the questions and wait for her to answer them. Let your mind be receptive. Focus on your love for her, on the essence of that beautiful soul who is your mother, and allow yourself to open the channel. Just let it open, and then write your question.
How many people are communicating with the other side, Matthew? Is this happening a lot?
It's happening a lot. There are hundreds of thousands of people who regularly communicate with the other side. And it does not require psychic abilities. It doesn't require that you have mediumistic skills. It doesn't require you being clairaudient. Using automatic writing really doesn't require any special ability whatsoever. All it does is it requires a willingness to ask questions and to listen. There is no other special ability needed. And so I'm going to encourage your listener to simply sit down, meditate for a few moments, have an object with him that belonged to his mother, think of her with love, and ask his question. I think he may be surprised to find that she has a great deal to say to him.
That's one day if somebody can invent some computer software to allow you to do the same thing without you having to write it, and it just shows up on your computer and you communicate that way. That's going to happen if it's all technology.
I wouldn't be surprised. The nice thing about writing it, and this has been something that has meant a lot to me with Jordan, is that I actually have a record of years of conversations, and I can look back and see what I wrote and the answers that he gave me. And in a way, that also is very comforting, that nothing he said to me is lost. I can go back and look at it anytime. So writing answers down has the advantage of giving you something that you can always look back at.
What do your family members say about this?
Well, different family members have different responses. I mean, I have some family members that I don't even talk about it. But I have others for whom it's very important, and hearing from Jordan and what I learned from him means a great deal to them, and it enriches their lives as it has enriched mine. So people have different reactions. Some people are very skeptical, and others are, you know, hang on every word.
How do you prove to that person, that skeptical person, that this is indeed Jordan? Or
well,
can you?
There's no absolute proof. Remember I talked a little bit about confirmatory experience. And you can get confirmatory experience, and one of the best ways to do it is through mediums. I'll give you another example. I consulted a medium in Los Angeles, and she, Austin Wells, and she told me, oh, yes, you're writing a book with your son, and here the first four chapters are about XYZ, and then the rest of the book he's dictating to you, and he's telling you about how things work in the afterlife and our life purpose here on Earth. And she says, and by the way, he's telling me now what the last chapter has to be about. Well, you know, this is, she doesn't know about the book. She doesn't know what's in it. And yet she has all of this detailed knowledge. So clearly Jordan is communicating to her to help me have more reassurance that what's really going on is a true connection past death. So confirmatory experiences are very helpful. But there is no absolute proof. All we have is our experience and my experience. And the other thing is, what is the value of the experience? What do I get from it? Is it helpful? Does it enrich my life? Does it give me wisdom that helps me live more effectively? Does it help me find my life purpose? And the answer to all of those things is yes. And so the communication not only feels genuine, but it feels like my life has changed in very, very positive ways. And I've learned this fundamental lesson that there is no real death, there is no real loss, that all of the ones we love are still there for us. And that is what I carry with me. And that's what after-death communication and channel writing has given me.
And nobody can take that away from you, Matthew.
No one can take that.
Let's go to Sabrina in Chula Vista, California. Happens to be a first-time caller. Hello, Sabrina.
Hi. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Funny coincidence, while I'm talking to you, everyone in my house is asleep, and the light in my older daughter's car keeps going on and off.
Whoa, and your phone's beeping, so hurry up before it dies on you.
I have a question. Throughout my life, I've kind of like felt things, and when I see people, I kind of get pictures. And with my children, they've like told me things when they're like 1 and 2 and 3 years old. And I've always been very supportive. Things that, you know, most people would say, well, you didn't do that. My son told me he was eaten by a bear.
Wow, my God.
We were walking to the park, and he said, oh, yeah, the bear came up here, and it got me, but it didn't get my brother or my father.
Oh.
And the word father is not something we say in the house. We say dad or papa.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So my question is that sometimes I feel these things going on around me, or it's hard to describe. And I know, like, sometimes I'll feel very afraid. And then I'll say, go to where you're happy. And then I feel okay. I'm just wondering, like, what do I do? I feel like I have a purpose with that. Like, if someone told me I had a purpose with that. But I don't know what to do with that. And
well, now I'm going to ask you as a psychologist, Matthew, what does she do with that?
Well, first of all, I think her son is actually having a memory, a breakthrough memory of a past life. And my guess is that the caller is psychic, has psychic abilities,
sure,
and is sensing things that are not evident to most of us. I think those abilities are precious. And some people are very afraid of them, and often people in the early stages of awakening as to their psychic abilities find it very anxiety-provoking to have these awarenesses and sense of things that no one else seems to share. And I guess I would encourage you to really open to that, to write down these inklings and senses of things and intuitive awarenesses, to write them down and just allow yourself to be interested and open to learning what this is going to offer you. My guess is that in time, there's something very valuable will come from this if you'll let the ability develop and not squelch it with fear.
What is the main message that Jordan and you would like people to get from the book Seeking Jordan?
the main message is that we are not alone, that there is no loss, that all of the people who have died before us are still there, are waiting and willing to connect to us at any time, that the love is the bridge, it's the conduit through which we can connect and communicate with them. So I just want people to know that the illusion of loss is something that they can let go of. The pain of loss, even, is something they can largely let go of. And they can choose to take the step to actually reach the other side, reach out, and connect to those people, those souls that they love and miss.
Matthew, thank you for sharing this story with us. I know initially it probably was not easy for you to do this, but it sounds like you are pretty darn happy now.
It's made a huge difference in my life. Absolutely. And thank you very much for having me, George.
Okay, you take care of yourself. If you ever need anything, you know where we are, okay?
I do. Thank you.
Matthew McKay, the book Seeking Jordan, website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Well, things are getting a little calmer in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The crowds are dissipating. One arrest, a couple police officers hurt from throwing rocks and things like that. I'm going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to have open lines for you now for the next couple hours. We will also take your text questions. We've got that ready to go. So just follow us through on Coast to Coast AM. The phone lines are open now on Coast to Coast AM.